Hello everyone.
Hello, hello.
I'm Tony.
And I'm Tally.
And we are
the Lazy Book Lovers.
This is a podcast for book lovers who procrastinate about reading and have never-ending to-be-read piles. Speaking of those to-be-read piles, we have been reading. We might have to change our podcast name because we've both been doing pretty well this year.
Yeah.
The whole foundation of our podcast is that we're lazy readers. And then we're reading a lot.
We started this to bully ourselves to read more, and now it's working.
So this is a reading update episode. We're only talking like a selection of what we've read because we're now both reading too much.
Yeah.
Before, we would struggle to fill an episode, especially with my books. Like, you've always been okay. So you're only getting a selection of what we read. We do have a Facebook group. And also, if you'd like to support us financially, if you've enjoyed the podcast, because we do this around full-time work and busy family lives, and it's kind of a passion project, but it'd be really cool if anyone had money to spare. You also get an exclusive link to a Discord group where we're trying to create a book community. That's a place where you could discuss these books in a bit more detail with us if you wanted to.
Yeah, or we might talk about books that we're not going to talk about on here.
Because when, you know, I've read, I think, 12 since our last reading update. You've probably done three times that.
I wouldn't even.
Yeah.
I can't even remember our last reading update. Was it this year, last year?
We're doing too well. So now you're just getting us the ones we want to talk about.
Which is good because it means we don't have to talk about the ones that perhaps we're not as enamoured with.
Yeah.
And we do both thrive at just bigging up books.
Yeah. I'm always like, whenever I watch, so I started watching more YouTube videos, like BookTube. It's like easy work watching.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting, but not too interesting.
And you should follow my YouTube.
Oh, yeah, I need to, don't I?
That has like two videos from 2 years ago. I do need to start off again.
I'll watch these and they have like a critical opinion of a book. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you are right. I was just like, la 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 la, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that story. They probably tried really hard.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I'm so bad at giving, like.
But it just depends, you know. Sometimes I can be quite critical, and other times I'm like, I mean, there'll be some books I'm going to talk about today that I'm aware
are flawed.
I could do a big list of criticisms of it, but that's not what the vibes that I remember. The vibes I remember are the good fun stuff.
If a book is entertaining, I will forgive poorly written. I will forgive plot holes. I will forgive shit characters. If it's an entertaining book, or like sometimes a book, the storytelling, as in like it's very readable, but it's kind of shit.
Yeah. And like as we've been reading more and our tastes have developed, or etc. As we've discussed previously, I can be a lot more critical now than I ever was, but I'm also very, very easy to DNF now. So I will not review, I'm not going to talk about a book here that I just wasn't enjoying, because I will just happily put it down and pick up something I will enjoy. So I don't do hate reading.
But I just like forcing myself to read something I wasn't enjoying. Yeah. I used to do that all the time out of like this shame, and I'm like, why?
Yeah, yeah. Or to finish a series or something. Yeah. Right, I mean, let's talk about some good things.
When I tried to do Game of Thrones is a very good example.
Okay.
Where that took me 5 months and I got to book 3 and DNF'd at that point.
And he still hasn't even finished a series, so do you wish to start?
I can go first.
Yeah, go on.
So, I have a non-fiction...
Oh, who is she?
This was actually a recommendation from Lexi, aka Newly Nova.
Yeah.
She did this thing of like, this video of like recommendations.
On her YouTube?
Yeah.
I've got to follow her YouTube. I've watched really her TikToks, but I've not actually watched any YouTube
I actually
yet.
Prefer her long form videos, to be honest.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's so many. I don't actually go on TikTok much now. A lot of the creators on TikTok that I like, I watch them on YouTube because I just want to watch longer stuff.
Or I just don't enjoy some of the trends that are happening on BookTok.
Oh, like the hot takes that aren't so hot.
And it's just like people dogpiling on. So I'm over it.
Yeah.
If I go back on there, like to start posting more regularly, it would just be like from the point of like, I fucking love books. Let me talk about them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this was one of her recommendations. I just like, I literally put a whole bunch of stuff she recommended in, like, and I bought it or listed it, wish listed it somewhere.
she has good taste.
This was on Audible, and I actually use a credit for this.
Oh, wow.
So this is 4,000 Weeks Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. I listened to the audio because I can't read. I've discovered my secret to non-fiction is listening. Can't read it.
Non-fiction as audio, peak.
Mm. And this is read by the author himself. I'm not going to read the descriptions and story graph because it's long as shit.
What's it called?
4,000 Weeks Time Management for Mortals.
Is it the Oliver Berkman?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go. Okay, cool.
Continue. All those things I just said. So I think I'm just going to give it my own sort of shit summary attempt. Yeah. So it kind of poses itself as a time management help book. And then the immediate thing he opens with is like, why do you feel like you need time management, friend?
Oh, no, it's going to be like that cleaning book.
It's a trickery. he's like, basically like, is it that you don't, that your time management is poor, or is it that there's just never enough time
to do all the things you're meant to be, or you're told you need to do?
Yeah. And then so from there, he kind of walks us through of like how we've ended up with this kind of culture of like this be productive all the time culture and where it came from. And he does go back through like the industrialization of Britain, which I'm not going to try and talk about the history because I've been frequently told by our editor I don't understand history.
Yeah, but history's not real, is it?
No, history's not real.
Sorry, you won't know, but that's a throwback to my son.
History's made up by God.
And if God's not real, then there's no history.
I love kids making sense of the world. Anyway,
yeah.
So it's to do with like how the Industrial Revolution changed working lives, and then the whole Henry Ford thing, the 9-to-5, blah, blah, blah. And then where the whole...
which we're still struggling against.
Yeah. The hustle culture, where that comes from, and this need to be constantly productive. He does lay the blame on social media a bit heavy, in my opinion, but I think the rest of his opinions are quite valid. It was very interesting. And then he kind of goes on to this concept of what he called sphinitude, of like there is a finite amount of time in your day. You have a finite amount of time on Earth. So rather than spending every second trying to be productive, and trying to be more productive and manage your time better, he's like, what if the secret is there is no way to manage your time better? There just isn't enough time. And rather than having this constant pressure and this hurry syndrome, which is like a actual phenomenon, like you can Google hurry syndrome, it's a thing. Instead of that constant pressure, what if, say, you know, you're doing washing up, instead of spending the whole time you're washing up resenting all the other things, you're doing this task, so you've got all these other things to do and this is taking too long.
All right, in my house.
Or like kids taking too long to get to bed, resenting that time because you've got work to do and you need to do this and I wanted to watch always. TV and I wanted to clean the kitchen and bathroom before I went to bed. And he's like, instead of spending that entire time thinking of the next step, he's like, what if you're going to walk back all this anxiety about productivity and just be present? You have chosen to use your precious moments at that point to wash up or take care of your kids or on a phone call to a friend, even if it takes 2 hours and you weren't expecting it. He's like, that is how you have chosen to use this precious moment. Stop resenting it and essentially just start to be present in the moment. And that way, this constant feeling of I don't know how to manage my time well, it was just that attitude shift. It's just about an attitude shift. I mean, this is all, it's 5.5 hours of very, he quotes lots of philosophers and like articles from like 1905 where someone's like, there's never enough time anymore. Mm. So he's like, this is a part of the human condition rather than the world being terrible right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the fact that we are all mortal and will die does, I think, sit on everyone's brain at some point, even if you're not consciously aware of it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's just that feeling of, like, that constant...
Live more like a child, basically. Because my son would be like... You know, he wants an ice cream and I'm like, you can have one tomorrow. And he's like, that's years away.
That's
and I'm like, it's really not though, is it?
She's like, oh no, that will never go. Yeah, so it was a properly, like, it was an interesting message, and it definitely kind of, like, stayed with me, as in I thought about it afterwards, but I do think it's not super accessible, the book, because it is so, like, that is all taken from florid quotes of philosophers, and there's 5 hours of it. And it's very academic.
Okay, yeah.
So I don't think it's a very accessible help book in that sense. Mm. Like, if I had been reading this, well, I would have put it down.
Yeah, yeah.
I would 100% put it down. But I think it's something that, because I'm, the reason I've read it is because I am the queen of too many things to do, always wanted to do more things, burnout, blah, blah, blah. So that's why I read it. And I was like, all right, I didn't need to be, like, personally attacked with that for opening thing.
Cheers.
He's like, maybe there's just not enough time. And you have to, the things, and when you choose, intentionally choose to not do one thing, to do another thing, embrace it. That is a choice you have made. Mm. And don't sit there resenting all the other things you could be doing, or the multiple versions of yourself that don't exist. They don't exist.
Yeah.
The version of you that also got all this stuff done doesn't exist. So why are you sat there hating your current existence and an envy of a non-existent one?
Yeah.
So it was more like, I don't know how helpful some people would find it, because it's more about, like, a mental shift in your attitude rather than solutions. But
because there is no solutions.
Maybe there's just not enough time, and you have a finite amount of time on this earth, which is what the 4,000 weeks thing is.
I was thinking recently about, if I had the option to become immortal,
yeah,
would I take it? Because I would watch all my family and my loved ones die and perish and whatever.
So it was a cheerful thought.
But I would also read the books I own, potentially.
I think,
I don't think I'd want to be immortal. It's as sexy as those vampire men make it seem when they're all depressed because they've been alive for years and then they found the perfect 17-year-old, but still.
So this is probably why the book is aimed at someone like me. The idea of that pressure of time being finite gone.
It would be amazing, wouldn't it?
I have time to do all the things. I have time to go travelling, but also build a career, but also save up enough to, like, have a house one day or something, or a dog even, or children one day, or, like, how to get, because I can't have both. Or one might have to wait till I'm, I know I did a bit of travelling when I was younger, but, like, to see the other places I haven't gotten to see, that might have to wait till I'm retired now or something. And it's just like, what if you don't make it to retirement? You know, cherry thought. And I was, so I do think the idea of, like, there not being a limit, there not being, like, a biological clock that they say as a woman.
I hate that term.
Yeah.
I hate that whole concept. Like, my partner went and saw his friends last night, and they have a 8-week-old. Mm. My partner went to go see the bubs. And I was like, did it make you feel broody for another one? He was like, no, not really. And I was like, yeah. Great without a womb, isn't it? Like, life's just
no
wonderful.
No hormones are trying to trick you. Which, it's just more like, fertility can decline the further you get into your
30s. Yes, I know.
And the risks are higher. And it's like, the reality is, if I were to have children, I will probably be in my late 30s at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, they, like, when I was in my 30s, children, when I had both my kids, and the statistics they give you of, like, the percentage of your age and, like, the risk of your child having Down syndrome or whatever. I was like, I don't need this scary factor, thank you. I'm pregnant right now. I can't go back in time.
The average age of the first child being born is 32 in this country anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So things are changing, and I think the science still needs to catch up a bit.
Yeah, but I think things are possibly changing. I mean, a lot of it is because people are choosing that way, but I think a lot of it is taken out of people's hands that they, you know, they're not as settled earlier on as our previous generations were in terms of having a stable job or a home or stable income.
Well, I've just now got to a salary that could, in theory, lead to a mortgage one day.
Mm.
But I don't know, the person that I might end up living with, he is also earning that amount but paying rent in London. We don't have the savings, neither of us. Mm-hmm. Both of us got into debt when we were younger, because millennial life story. Such silly decisions on my part, anyway.
But also going to university.
Yeah. And, like, I am still living with my parents, and I'm 30. Mm-hmm. So, like, I might, and because I've got some money to pay back, I might not move out until I'm 31, 32. So then I want a few years to enjoy my own home for the first time in my life before I'm taking care of someone else. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, oh. So that's, yeah, obviously why I needed the message in this book, which was like, chill the fuck out, dude.
Yeah, chill out.
Time is finite, yes, but this is how you've chosen to spend this precious moment. Stop looking to the next one.
This isn't a book I'm going to talk about today, but I've just finished a book called Becoming a Matriarch by Helen Knott. Yeah. It's a memoir of, oh my god, it's hit me so hard, but it's a memoir of a woman who loses her mum to cancer and then her grandmother to just old age within 6 months.
Yeah.
And she is from an indigenous tribe. I cannot remember off the top of my head which one it is. And it's the weight of holding that matriarch role and like holding your family's stories and being responsible for all these things. And when I was reading it, it made me very aware of like, I only have a small amount of time with my children and I don't want to waste it like with other things. And I haven't really thought that way before. Yeah. It also made me message my mum. So, yeah. It was pretty emotional.
Yeah, I mean, like...
Great book, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I definitely kind of came to that same realisation when we lost my granddad. Because, like, seeing it, all the pressure that was on my mum to take care of everything.
Yeah.
And then how that got handed down as the only girl. Not saying that my brother didn't help or whatever, the expectations were just societally different for me.
Yeah. And that seems to be relevant in most cultures.
Yeah, and then also the realisation that by the time I move out, selfishly, I might not get that long before I have parents to care for, unlike my mum who got 40 years, almost, of being the child before she had to take care of her parents.
Yeah.
Where she had her own home, her own separate life and family. I might not get that long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Well,
sorry, not particularly joyful, this discussion.
These are things I often think about. Like, my partner's parents are... There's quite an age difference between them and my parents. And
same with my partner.
Yeah, and we are the closest. His brother does not live.
So all the pressure's going to be...
Yeah, and I'm like, at some point, it is going to be children and parents, and I'm fully aware that as the woman in the relationship, it's unfortunately probably going to land a lot on me, and oh boy.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I'm the only one that drives out of me and my sibling, so like appointments, that entire pressure.
Yeah.
Because, sorry Gav, I know you're listening to this. because he never intends to drive. So that entire pressure of transporting our parents when they are too old to drive is going to be on me.
Yeah, like my...
And I already know, that might be 30, 40 years in my future.
My brother doesn't drive, he doesn't work, he doesn't do anything. And I'm like, yeah, like my parents are always saying to me about looking after him when they're gone. And I'm like, no, I've got my own kids.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have look after an adult child as well, like... Okay, anyway. So let's move on.
Right, so you're up next.
So, I read my first Andrew Joseph White book. I have all of his books on my bookshelf.
Of course.
No, he's had two out, and I've been lucky enough to get a physical arc of his September release as well. Andrew Joseph White is a... trans male, and he is also on the autism spectrum, I believe. Yeah, I don't think I've seen him mention ADHD anywhere, but he's discussed autism. And so he writes YA horror from the perspective of being someone in the body that is
interesting.
Like that, yeah.
But so sensorily, that's quite...
Yeah. So the first one I read is called The Spirit Bears Its Teeth. And it follows a 16-year-old in London in the 1800s who was born a girl, but he knows that he is not a girl. But obviously in the Victorian era, there's not much availability for changing gender.
I feel like I've heard about this book somewhere recently.
I might have mentioned it because I think I was reading it last time. Maybe. Silas, which is his chosen name, in this world, it's like alternate Victorian London because it's set up very much as we understand Victorian London to be, but then it has this element of like being able, there's the veil and you can talk to the dead, which is very Victorian London, actually. Yeah. And for some reason, and there's no, even in the story, they don't know how it happened. Some people started being born with violet eyes. And Silas is one of those people. So as a wife, they are very sought after. So Silas's parents obviously expect to get a very large dowry when they sell her off.
Mm.
And Silas does not want that life, obviously. Silas's older brother is a doctor, and he allowed Silas to learn alongside him. And Silas wants to run away and become the man that he knows he is and become a doctor and follow in the footsteps of, I can't remember the doctor's name, but there was actually that doctor, wasn't there? James, I think it might have been James, I don't know. But after the doctor died, they found out that...
he had been performing operations.
Yeah, and they found out that he was a woman. Obviously, we don't know how his... It's very hard when you... I mean, I recently read a book about... It was called Before We Were Trans, and it's a story of the history of trans people. And it's so hard to know in the past how people would have associated themselves, whether they would have said, I'm trans or non-binary or... You know,
well, they didn't have these words.
Yeah, and if they did have these words, we can't put them into their mouths. We can't say that this doctor that was born a female and took on the mantle of a man and became a very well-known doctor, we can't say that that was a trans person because it could have just been that they were non-binary, or it could have just been that she just found a way to make her life work
to be a doctor in that era, and it had nothing to do with gender identity. Yes,
so it's extremely hard. But Silas wants to become a doctor and dreams of running away, masquerading as a man, as Silas, as he is.
Yeah.
And then it gets to a point that Silas's parents are like, right, you are marrying this person. Silas tries to escape, gets caught and sent to a sanitarium / finishing school.
Mm-hmm.
And they take young women there who have violet eyes and try and get rid of the sickness, as it's told, and molds them into the perfect wives they are required to be.
That is something that also happened, is people who were discovered to be, say, lesbian, being sent to sanatoriums.
And it is a really, really good book. It's really good. The horror is very, like, the foreboding of what is going to happen. There is horrific elements, and as in a lot of Victorian London or Victorian... Yeah, in general, time period pieces, there's like the surgeries being carried out in the name of science and all this kind of stuff.
Kidnapping bodies from graveyards.
Exactly,
or
yeah.
Poor people selling bodies, yeah.
It's really... And then Silas has a lot of things that... The term is obviously not used in the time period, but Silas is clearly autistic, has a lot of autistic traits, which makes it even harder for him to get by because he struggles with like the social expectations and stuff. And he really struggles with, he needs to flap his hands when he's getting stressed, and he can't do that because that's been kind of beaten out of him at finishing school. And when Silas talks about, there were so many so many pieces in this that really just made me stop and think.
Mm.
And Silas is like talking about how, like, what your body feels like to have a womb in it that shouldn't be there, and how the womb feels and stuff, and talks about how he imagines it would be to be pregnant and things like that. And all of those thoughts really, really hit home to me. Silas was talking about how, like, the womb is just this thing and, like, shouldn't be there, and, like, he really goes into details of how it feels to have it there. And I'm not going to lie, like, those thoughts were things that I had when I was, like, a teenager.
Or gender dysphoria, sorry, that's the right word.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I remember. Like, I remember feeling that way about having these feminine things in me that made me feel sick. And, yeah, it was a really... Oh, yeah, the book was good. It was good.
Mm.
I'll be reading the next two very soon. I did it... did it tandem book and audio, and it was really, really good way to do it, I thought. Yeah. All of the audio books are on Libro FM if you have a Libro FM membership.
Or I believe you have a link for a free 2 months, or at least I do. Is that me? Not you.
I think you've got one. I've got a referral code, but I don't know what it gets you, but you've got something for like 2 months.
Yeah, on my blog there is a link for 2 months free.
Oh, I don't know how long it's going.
Affiliate link, obviously.
I don't know how long it's going on for, but Libro FM are doing a... I think it might just be this month, so I don't know if you'll be in time for it. But go check their social medias. They're doing something so you get like 3 credits if you're a new person.
Yeah, I don't know if you get it with this 2 months free offer as well. I don't know how that works.
Mm. Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my next one, we did touch on briefly in the 6 month reading update, I believe.
Yeah.
But I did want to talk about it in a bit more depth.
Yeah.
I read In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado.
Mm.
Well, listened to. Again, this was another non-fiction audio. Another recommendation.
She narrates it herself, doesn't she? Mm.
Yeah. So this is actually a fiction author who then wrote a biographical story of her life in an abusive relationship with a lesbian partner. She herself is bi. She is with a female partner in this domestic abuse situation that she experienced. This was another recommendation from Lexi.
The importance of raising awareness of domestic abuse in same-sex relationships, in particular lesbian relationships or sapphic relationships, is so important, because people do associate it to be a manly, a masculine thing.
Well, so she does quote throughout the book, like, actual court cases that happened.
Mm.
So it's sort of, actually, I'm not going to skip ahead, I'm just going to tell you how it's told. It's very abstract. All the chapter titles are The Dream House as the Green Road or something. That's a really bad example. I don't have, like, a direct example.
No, but yeah.
But
yeah.
She's like, Dream House as... hot lesbian girl. Like, she does, it's always like, and they're all abstract stories.
Mm.
And it's peppered with her childhood before, during, and after the abuse. And then also random snippets of the history of domestic abuse cases, specifically queer abuse cases.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of her research was done from the lesbian perspective, because she was like, that's how I'm telling my story as well. I didn't feel like I had a right to speak on the other things.
Mm.
There's also not much research.
Yeah.
She was like, there's very little on sort of lesbian relationships, gay relationships, let alone everything else in the alphabet mafia.
Yeah, I mean, the whole even logging domestic abuse amongst heterosexual relationships when a police is called is a relatively new thing, let alone when we start getting,
because her the abuse she experienced is coercive emotional abuse, which in the UK only became prosecutable as an offence or like as a charge. It was in my second year of uni, so I would have been 1920, so it would have been about
10 years ago,
2012-ish.
Yeah, and I think even though it is now something that can be prosecuted, I can't imagine
it's hard to prove.
I think it's one of those things that I mean, they do make it incredibly difficult.
Well, I mean, I follow a few people on TikTok of, like, they're advocates that have built up a body of evidence. Mm-hmm. So this one I follow, she started a secret email address, and she used to email picture evidence of what happened to her with a date and time and a description of exactly what happened. And so they're date stamped, they're like...
Yeah.
And it wasn't enough.
No, the police would just be like, well, call us if you have, like, threats of death that can be proved, or call us when they actually hurt you or something like that.
Well, she didn't try to prosecute until a couple years later. No. And then we run into the whole issue of... And there was also assault, sexual assault through the relationship as well. And, like, they were like, oh, yeah, we can't get him on that charge, but we can maybe get him on that charge. But now it's been too long for that charge. She does have a restraining order against him, but it has to be renewed, and she has to prove that she's still in danger. Needs
to be redone. It's ridiculous.
But apparently, because he, I didn't know these laws until I followed her. These are all UK based, sorry guys. So he renewed because he started stalking her again. Mm. Counts as renewed abuse, which means then they're allowed to get him on 10-year-old rape charges.
Oh, interesting.
Because he started the abuse again. So then she found a loophole in order to be able to prosecute him, but it's still not doing much. Or if, even though there's an active restraining order, the police don't come out if he's on her property, no. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
So, like, straight relationships we're talking about, it's not great. So you can imagine in queer relationships, it's even less supported. She had one court case where in court they were like, yeah, we don't believe a woman could abuse another woman.
Yeah.
Because there was just some...
Question mark?
The first person in US court history who tried to use bad women syndrome as a defence for having killed her partner.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's... If those of you don't know, that's something you can claim if you have killed your abusive partner in defence. It's battered women syndrome. It's been a recognised thing for about 50, 60 years.
And then it kind of got co-opted and misused by men for... like hurting gay men because they were scared they were going to get as usual got abused.
But yeah, so it was, she quotes that court case and how they were like, yeah, we just don't think a woman could do this to you. Yeah. And it was physical abuse, and they were like, yeah, we don't believe you, basically. Even though she had evidence, she had pictures, she had witness statements, they were like, yeah, no, we just don't think a woman could do this. Yeah. This was, I think, a court case in the 1980s. But from the impression I got from the book is it's not much better now.
No, I can't imagine it is.
I mean, domestic violence in this country is on the rise. Thank you, Tories. Who are out.
Yeah, and with the recent men's football tournament happening as well.
But in general, it's just been on the rise. But we're getting to all the political stuff. So yeah, it was...
Yeah, I might cry.
It was... a really, really good read. It's told in a very abstract, ethereal way. So if you're interested in this kind of stuff, it might be a more easy way to read a book about something like this.
Mm, yeah.
But it's really clever how, through the abstract snapshots, well, obviously we get snapshots of the abuse happening, but then we get the sort of snapshots of the red flags that she didn't see as red flags at the time. So, like, the puzzle pieces...
Yeah.
Of how she revealed herself to be an abuser before she started to abuse. Because that is the trauma bonding cycle, which, if you don't know what that is, there's a podcast called Ladies and Tangents. They have an episode about trauma bonding, and it was really good. Because it's basically talking about that cycle, the abuse cycle, which is how someone can go from, I would never accept that kind of behaviour, to accepting it. Mm-hmm. And how you are sort of groomed into accepting it.
Yeah.
So that trauma bond cycle of love bombing, and that's what this girl did when they first got together, love bombed her, like loved the shit out of her, and that's something that Carmen says she needed at the time. She needed to be loved like that, and that's what this person did. She predated on that need.
Well, they do. They find people that need that.
Yeah. And then how, like, bit by bit, Carmen is made to accept behaviour she never would have accepted in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, the first time that she gets screamed at, and then how nice her girlfriend is afterwards, and how she was so good for so long afterwards, and how she, like, their relationship was perfect. Mm-hmm. That 3 months where nothing happened, perfect. And if you have ever been in a relationship this, like this, when it is good, it is so good.
You're always chasing
that. And that high, then you start to chase that high. Yeah. You get forced into this cycle. It is a cycle where you accept something you would never have accepted. Because I have been in a relationship like this. And loads of people will say to me now, I can't imagine you accepting that. I can't imagine a version of you being tolerating that. Because people know how I am. I'm quite forceful, always have been, always been quite outspoken, you know, ready to sort of go to bat for my friends at the slightest sort of sign.
Yeah.
And people still say to me now, I can't understand a version of you that would let this happen. And I'm like, yeah.
Sounds a bit victim-blamey.
Yeah. Which is why this book was quite hard-hitting for me, because I was like, It's the same things that Carmen gets told by her friends afterwards. Yeah. I have been told by friends.
And it's the cycle as well of when Carmen goes from blaming her partner to blaming herself. Yeah.
And you can see how she's like, well, you know, if I hadn't said that, she wouldn't have got mad. So she's right. I'm the problem.
Mm.
Which is, again, how a trauma bonding cycle works. It's how a coercive abuse cycle works. You're slowly manipulated into thinking it was your fault and that you are the problem and you are deeply flawed and no one will ever love you and like all this kind of stuff and like you deserve everything that's happening to you. But it's real, the snapshots sort of build that puzzle pieces together. Yeah. It's a really clever book.
It is a wonderful book. And the audio is amazing.
Yeah, because obviously it's narrated by her. Herself,
yeah,
which I think must be, I don't know how she even wrote it, let alone sat there and narrated it for like 5 hours, because this is stuff that I have only just been able to talk about, really. This was a long time ago for me, so, and it's only in the last, say, 3 years, but I've been able to call it what it was,
mm-hmm.
even though I think other people around me knew what it was, we just didn't have the words for it, where I've been able to call out people in my life who are like, get over it already, and I'm like, you don't get to tell me when I'm over abuse.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get to tell me when I'm done with that.
No.
I don't care how long ago it was, you don't get to tell me when I'm done.
Obviously, I can't speak to you, but from my own personal experience, sometimes it doesn't, you don't get over it. Some things are just always there. I still automatically act a certain way over certain things because of how I had to react before. You know, I very much like, I will always blame myself straight away for anything that goes wrong, even if it's nothing to do with me. And now that is me with my kids. So if they do something, I'll straight away be like, that was my fault.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have left them there. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want, that still is here for me.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that that's just a part of me now. Yeah. I don't think that will ever go.
Well, that's what I've had to say to the person I'm dated now. I had to sort of say to him, because, like, I don't know, we'd have, like, a day out, and, like, the train journey would be stressful, and it would be hot or something, or crowded or whatever, and then he would be in a bad mood, just because stressful train journey.
Mm.
Or I've had to put him outside of his comfort zone, because he is a homebody, and I've asked him to do an outside thing, and he's just dealing with that. But then in my head, I'm like, oh my God, he's mad at me. I've ruined the day's ruined. Like, my knee-jerk reaction has always been, oh, this is my fault.
Yeah, that's exactly
the same. And the day's going to be ruined, and it's not. But then I'm approaching everything he says from then on, from that lens.
With that ideal.
So I've had to sort of say to him, I was like, look, it's not on you to manage my emotions. I'm working on this. But I was like, I need you to not say certain things, or at least say explicitly, this train is hot.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, oh, fuck me, this is so much effort. And I'm like,
oh. Like, being out with me is so much effort.
And then I'm like, oh, the day's like, oh, I'm the bitch that made you do this. And it's going to, and I'm like, oh, we're going to have fun. My adrenaline's like,
yeah.
Like that. And it's just like, no, baby, it's just a hot tube. And I'm like, I need you to say.
You just need to be a bit more explicit with these things, please.
And then I don't have to sit there wondering why I'm a terrible person.
Oh.
And I didn't think these things had affected me until I started dating someone seriously, and like he said, like something happened one day and he was joking and I straight up had a panic attack,
yeah,
and he was like, huh, babe, what? What? And I was like, he was like, you should have told me that was a trigger. And I was like, I didn't know
until we right found now.
It. Sorry.
Thanks.
So yeah, sorry. A deep one today, guys. I'm sorry.
Shall I?
Have you got a lighter one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. No, yeah. I read, and this is now, oh my God. So I'm doing a lot of romanticy, and safe to say, every romanticy book I read that I'm loving is becoming me now.
Yeah.
It's just
it's your whole personality.
My love. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Martha's just gone on a liking spree on our Instagram.
Thanks, Martha. I don't know if you listen still, but.
I read The Crimson Moth by Kristen Cicerelli. I hadn't heard of this at all, but apparently it's a BookTok sensation.
Oh, I'm really off the BookTok sphere now, yeah, to be fair.
And then I was like, well, I don't really go on BookTok much now. And then I looked into it and it was a Fairy Loot title this year as well, which explains why it was a BookTok sensation. So this is the first in a duology, which is good for the off, because I know it's not going to be a long series. And this follows, oh my God, it says enemies to lovers doesn't get more high stakes than a witch and a witch hunter falling in love.
Ooh, oh, but that's angsty
it's
shit.
It's so good. Okay, so this is set, I think it's like kind of Victorian era again. It's not specifically any location, but it is kind of Victorian vibes.
Okay.
Droon is a witch, and in this society, witches are hunted and killed, well, purged. They're bad news bears, right? People don't know that they're witches until witches are only females in this world.
Okay.
And they don't know they're witches till they start their menstrual cycle and it comes out black.
Oh,
and then their powers
like
start.
One of the gold, yes, gold period.
The gilded ones.
Yeah.
Yes, I was thinking
of that.
I still
need to read the next book in the series for that.
Merciful something. Yeah,
it's like it's finished now and I still haven't read the second or third book.
So Rune is someone who is quite high in society. She's known as like quite a vapid socialite who spends her days being quite frivolous and just caring about dresses and throwing balls and la 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 la. But by night, she is not only a witch, but she rescues witches from the hunters and helps them escape.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
So
and
you
then
get like Bridgerton daytime, witchy shit.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Perfect.
So she is very, she is held very, very high regard because her grandma was a witch, and she, at the beginning of the story, you find out she handed her grandma in for being a witch. Yeah, and it still haunts her now. She didn't find out she was a witch till after her grandma had gone.
Oh, shit.
So she is held in, like, very high regard amongst the socialites because she handed in her family member, you know?
Yeah.
And then it comes to light that her her ships that she owns that are merchant ships are the ones being used to transport the witches. So Gideon, who is a very high witch hunter, decides he's going to start dating her.
Wait, so quick question. The general population, do they know witches exist in this
they
world?
They do.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and they're all against them. So he decides he's going to start dating her to try and find out who's using her ships. And she knows. She knows what he's doing.
Oh, that sounds so good.
It's so good.
Oh, my God, I'm going to have to add it to a list.
When I got to the
future
end.
Future me, when you listen to this edit. Hopefully you're not driving.
When I got to the end, oh my God, there were so many bits that I was like, I did not see that coming. And there was one bit that I did not see coming.
Which is unusual for a romanticy.
Yeah, it was so, so good. It's
this one,
it's YA
as well.
That
deserves the hype.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
In my opinion, anyway. And it's YA as well, so.
Happened, so not much spicy?
No, they do, it's like Fade to Black.
Oh, right, yeah.
Loose descriptions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, that does sound good.
Yeah, I think you will love it.
Yeah.
I listened to
add that to a list.
I listened to it as an audio, so maybe check Everam and see if it's on there.
Might be one I can read, though. I'm not doing actual reading.
I listened to that on Borrowbox, actually, so... Yeah,
that does sound
good. Will love it. 10 out of 10
All right. Fine.
Have you got something fun for us?
So, just quick, I'm not going to talk about it, because... We've been talking a while. Read the second book in the Prickle Island Zoo series, Easy Tiger. This one is like the girl is like ADHD, pixie, manic pixie vibes, and he is like grumpy. So it's Grumpy Sunshine, but like good Grumpy Sun. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
A.K. Mulford. Oh,
Ali K. Mulford is her romance pen name.
Yeah.
This one had me squee-facing. Oh. It made me cry at the end. I cried for the last...
Did you read it on KU?
Yeah. Mm. I cried for the last 30 pages of it. And I was like, so that's the one where I posted it in my story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I tagged A.K. Mulford. And I was like, dude, this was supposed to be a fluffy romance.
What, you're making
and I've been crying. Because it's set in a zoo. So, like, there was animal stuff. Something happens to an animal. I'm not going to spoiler it for anyone. But... That at the same time as the third act misunderstanding kind of kicked off, there was the animal thing happening.
Oh, no.
And I was just like, I had so many feelings and I did not stop crying for the last 30 pages.
This
I stayed,
is too many feelings.
I stayed up till 1:30 in the morning finishing it.
Oh, my God.
And I had work the next day. It was a whole... Anyway, so I'm not going to do an in-depth review. Just know it's fucking good. Go read the series. It's okay, you. This author never lets me down.
We stan.
We are. Forever. I stan her so much. So the one I'm going to talk about in-depth, though... Which we kind of did touch on in a previous episode, so I'm not going to go too far. Rhapsodic.
Yes.
Again, the descriptions are a bit too long, so I'm going to...
They're far too long on Rhapsodic, aren't they?
So I'm gonna do you a shit summary. In this world, we know that there are supernatural people. People know about them, but they still kind of tend to fly under the radar, because mainstream people are a bit, like, not sure.
But nervous. Yeah.
So they have their own police body that deal with their crimes, and it's completely separate from, like, human stuff. And they have their own governing body that kind of work... They kind of work together. Our main character owns a PR detective agency with her witch best friend. She's a siren, our main character, and they use their powers to kind of do their PR stuff quite well. Not PR. I'm using the wrong word.
PI.
PI. Fucking hell. I work in marketing, can you guys tell? Yeah, to do their PI stuff. And then, like, they kind of cover their tracks. So they're just, like, considered very good PIs, but they're low-key using, like, their supernatural powers to do it. And the story flashes between her present day and her past. In her past, she was being abused by her stepfather, who was her sole guardian, and she killed him in defence. And then calls someone called the Bargainer, which is like this supernatural...
Big bad
dude. He's like the king of the night in the fey world.
Yeah, and if you make a bargain with him, well, you shouldn't.
Yeah, he will call in his chit, and whatever happens to you is usually not good.
Yeah.
He's
like a last case scenario, isn't
he? Yeah, and she's a minor at the time. She's 2 weeks for her 16th birthday, which we'll get to. And so he's like, I don't make deals with minors. Piss off. And she's like... And then he pieces together what sort of happened.
Yeah, because her stepdad is like a big deal, isn't
he? Yeah, he's a famous seer and quite powerful and has like lots of...
Been a while since I read it.
Lots of deets on very important people because of his seer powers. Yeah. So he's kind of untouchable, and she was being abused by him. So she at the time was like, there's no way out.
Yeah.
And she was like, and if this goes to the police... I don't think I'll come off out of this world because of how important my stepdad is.
Yeah.
So the bargainer ends up throwing her a freebie. He's like, I will deal with this mess. I'll send you to the supernatural boarding school because you're clearly a fucking siren because your powers don't manifest until you're 16. And he's like, you're clearly a siren, so I'm going to send you to this supernatural boarding school. I'll sort it all out. And he's like, it's a freebie. Don't ever call me again. He's like, it might not take forever because sirens are all kind of cursed. Do that what you will. And then... She ends up getting called by a detective her first year at the boarding school and panics and calls the bargainer again. She's like, make it go away for realsies this time. And he does. And this time it's a real favour that she has to pay back because she's over 16. And then because she's quite lonely and quite traumatised, she starts calling the bargainer again and again and using favours just to make him hang out with her.
Yeah, she's and like, beat her let's friend. Have a sleepover, paint each other's nails, watch
yeah.
face mask.
So he is a several hundred year old fae, and they make it very, very clear it's all platonic in the before flashes. And in the present day...
Still feels icky. It's even icky. It's platonic. Yeah.
In the present day, he comes back to call in his favours after not speaking to her for 7 years and, like, breaking her heart.
And she's angry with him about yeah. it.
And at this point, she's a badass PI. She's not a scared little 16-year-old anymore. So she's like, fuck off, don't need you. And he's like, haha, joke's on you. I can magically compel you.
And you've got, like, 90...
300. That's she it. Has 300 favours. Yeah.
Calling.
So she has no choice but to, like, do the favours. And basically there's something happening in his world, in the fae world, which is a different realm. I don't know if I made that clear. To the normal human world, fae have their own realm kind of thing that they can jump
the
in and out
stuff
of.
When they get to that at the end was my favourite part of that book. Mm. That was, oh, so good.
So he's like, basically I need you to do your PI thing and help me solve this mystery that's happening, that's been going on for years. Someone's doing bad things to people in my court and all the other courts. It's very Akatar vibes. There's like a day court and a night court and blah, blah, blah courts.
Always is.
Yeah. And so the story flashes between the present where they're trying to figure out this mystery and the past where we walk towards what he did to break her heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the present, they start to become romantically involved because she always had a crush on him when she was a child.
Because she was a child and he was an adult that looked after her.
Yes. You know, it's very playing with the daddy issues in a very icky way, I felt, because he's like her protector.
And can we say playing with pedo issues?
Yeah. Yeah. He's still...
Can we call it what it is?
He's still essentially grooming her even when she's 16, even though that they make
you
it very
clear.
You can
try and frame it however you want.
They make it very clear it's all platonic. But then he's like, oh, I always loved you this way, romantically, when you were 16. Oh. When we were friends. Even though he never...
If you can ignore that bit.
I couldn't... For me,
I struggled the whole way through.
It ruined the whole... The storytelling was good.
Yeah.
The tension in the present day was good.
Yeah.
The story about her past is like, it's... She could have been older and we would have achieved the same effect. She could have even been 18 at the very least.
And
it could have been...
Zodiac Academy, they're adults.
Yeah. Like, she could have been an adult and it was like a supernatural university rather yeah. than, you know, a sixth form.
Boarding school for yeah. children.
Yeah, she could have been older and we would have had the same effect. The abuse could have just been hitting rather than sexual abuse, which is what it was. And we will still have had the same effect.
Yeah, and so it's been a while since I read it, but my memory is the reason she kills her stepdad is
it's an accident.
But
she basically grabs a bottle and smashes him with it, yeah. not thinking it would hurt him, just to get him off her.
But it's
and
made,
it cuts an artery.
It's made very clear that, like, when she turned 16, if he was still alive, she wouldn't have been able to escape. He would have kept her. Like,
yeah.
So, like, that could have easily been done at the age of 18 or 19. Like, there's yeah. no...
There is no reason yeah. for her to be a child at the start of this book.
No, and that's where it went wrong.
I could not get past it. No. It ruined the whole book for me.
Mm-hmm.
All the cute scenes from back when, where he is just trying to help her heal, they're all icky.
They're all
because
tainted.
Of the age gap.
Yeah.
Because of how old she is. The age gap is like, he's hundreds of years old. It would be weird no matter what. But we can forgive it. She's a grown adult.
If they had it that he wasn't attracted to her as a child.
Yeah.
And when he came back into her life, he was then attracted to her. But they'd been separated for so long that I can allow, you know? But no, dude.
And
no.
Also,
put your wings away.
The only reason they get separated is because his magic, the way the magic works is kind of weird.
Be a spoiler?
No. I'm not going to say what has
okay,
happened.
Cool.
A favour goes wrong.
Yeah.
Neither of them chose to leave the other alone. It's like all a big misunderstanding in the end. I think that's fairly clear throughout.
Yeah.
I think that's okay to say. It's been out a long time. I don't know.
I would like to read the rest of it. I was so angry at that I put the book down yeah. for like 2-3 years.
But that's the fact that he only let her grow up without him. Because of what happened.
Yeah, otherwise he would have been
otherwise he would
the whole time.
Yeah. Waiting until she was old enough.
Oh my god, so...
Which is what he says.
Yeah.
He was waiting until she was old enough.
when he comes back into her life, she's dating a shifter, and there's a bit where the shifter's like, is he naked in her garden, like shouting at him or something, and that made me laugh.
Yeah,
it's icky, and I'm over this. I'm over it in books.
I mean, how old is Rhapsodic? It is a bit one of the older ones, isn't
yeah,
it?
I think so.
2016 I always forget where you find publication date on Storygraph.
Click first pub at the top.
Yes. Oh, it's just... Oh, I've clicked the wrong thing.
Did you click
editions? I'm like a boomer. No, I clicked her fucking name. Oh, it's got the publication date of the audiobook, so that's not helpful.
Ah.
2016.
That's what I guessed.
So we are in the 2010s era of this dodgy stuff.
Yeah, this was probably like...
But a bit further into it than Excusable.
Yeah. It's a series anyway, if you want to check it out.
It was a good book. That's not my problem. Like, it was that's a good book. If it wasn't this,
yeah.
I couldn't get past it.
That was exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So I read... Oh, hang on. I've got a bit of a theme going on. I read Cursed Under London by Gabby Hutchinson Crouch.
Is this another Victorian London?
It's Elizabethan London. And this is the first in a series. It comes out... this month?
4th
of July it came UK out.
People who might not know UK history, this is Elizabeth I, who is well before Queen Victoria in the Victorian era.
Yeah.
Several hundred years in between. We're talking Tudorish times.
Okay, so this is an alternate Elizabethan London. Mm-hmm. So it follows, it's in a world where magical creatures are known and live alongside humans. Right. Like, vampires, zombies, dragons, just loads of different stuff.
Okay.
And they live alongside humans, and they have, like, if they can control their urges, you know, kind of pass as human, not pass as human, they don't have to pass as humans, but if they can control, they can live, like, in Elizabethan London. So there's, like, pubs just for vampires and things like this. And then they have Deep London, and it's an underground city where the dangerous supernatural creatures live. Oh, and there's like werewolves and stuff like that. And to get there, you have to go like in the underground.
I like that.
And they have passports, and when they get, if they get turned into something, they have to get a new passport done and get to like file their paperwork to get a new one saying they're now a vampire or whatever. It's a romanticy with comedy. The author is a comedian, so it is. I listened to this. It's on Everand. Mm. I listened to this and read it because I've got an ARC copy as well. I was just laughing out loud constantly from this around the house, just laughing.
Adding shit to my list.
This month, I've got a load to add to your list. I'm sorry. So we follow two guys called Fang and Lazar who wake up from their deaths. They're not human, but they're not anything known. They're not vampire.
Ooh,
they're not zombie. They're not werewolf. No one knows what they are. And they each have different like powers and physically look different. So Lazare has wings. Fang has this power that he can make you see gross things. So when they're getting so when they're getting attacked by like a local gang, the Harpennies or whatever they're called, he makes them see like vomit coming down the walls, or makes them see maggots because it's his powers. And then Lazar's got like wings. Yeah, so they come across each other because they've both woken up undead, but they don't know what they are, and they find out they can't die. And so they kind of join forces with this tiny little dragon. He's so small, everyone laughs at the dragon. And a Welsh woman who runs an apothecary. And they kind of team up.
Yeah.
And they are trying to find out where this curse has come from, what it is. Fang wants to die. Lazir wants to go back to being a human because he wants to be an actor.
Yeah.
And he's worried this is going to ruin his acting career. And they end up having to go into Deep London and stuff. It is hilarious. It's so funny. And
damn, yay. That's two now.
The ending, I was like,
You can't leave me hanging. This is so good. Oh, yeah, so God good. And the cover is really, really gorgeous. That's why I picked
that.
It up.
Yeah, that's definitely, I can see where that got you.
Yeah, 10 out of 10, recommend. If you have Everand, go check it out. If you don't, we have a link somewhere to get a free trial or whatever.
It's 2 months free as standard now. It's not like just free if you've got a share link. It's all get 2 months free.
Go do that then.
And you get, you get digital books as well as audio, by the way, and articles included in it.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot in it. Like, you get a lot for your money if you continue the subscription.
Yeah, for in England it's $7.99, I think, a month. Mm-hmm. I've got one more after this, which is a series, so I'm going to bump it together.
Yeah, so I think I've been reading depressing stuff lately.
And I'm reading happy stuff.
Oh, so you're reading romantasy, and I'm reading non-fiction. What, we just switched? Did we switch places?
Freaky Friday.
And I'm doing more audios.
Yeah, and I've read loads of physical stuff this month. What's going on? I've actually been making myself sit down and read. Who are we?
Who is she? This is another long description, so I'm going to ignore it. I'm just not on the vibe today. So I read Love and Other Words by Christina Lauren.
Oh, it's the yellow with the white.
Yeah, the one you said you were going to try.
Yeah.
So if a couple of reading updates ago, or the last one, I had listened to Twice in a Blue Moon by the same author.
Authors.
We think it's two people.
It is two people,
we need
people,
to.
Yeah.
We never actually verified that fact. Did you? Yeah. All right. I just trusted you, I think. I've been referring to them as like they, as in generic two people.
Combined pen name, yeah.
All right, cool.
Writing partners and best friends.
How dare I doubt you.
That could be us one day.
We could never herd our cat brains enough together to write a book together. I'm trying to work out what name we would use.
You're thinking about that and I'm just like, what name would we use?
Yeah, ours aren't tonally.
Tonally.
It's my name that's the problem.
Tony. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Sorry.
We'll work on that behind the scenes. Coming soon to a bookstore near you.
So this is like a completely different vibe. Apart from the fact it's still a second chance romance. This is completely different from Twice in a Blue Moon.
Okay.
Not, vibe is similar, but as in the story.
That was the one with like the actress or something, right? Yeah.
So it's not like Ali Hazelwood, which kind of uses the same template in different formats. This is completely different. So it's another one. I read like a bunch of second chance romances in a row, coincidentally, recently as well. Fuck knows. So this flashes between the present and the past. Present day, we've got Elliot and Macy. They have just met again for the first time in 11 years. They were friends and then boyfriend and girlfriend as teenagers. We don't know why, for quite a long time. They haven't talked for 11 years. Mm-hmm. And then she bumps into him one day in a coffee shop. And she is engaged, but it's to a guy. It happened very fast. And her best friend's a bit sceptical. So her best friend encourages her to go reconnect with Elliot and heal some old wounds. Mm-hmm. And the story is just told in bits and pieces of, we go to the past where she meets Elliot. So when she meets Elliot, she's 13. She just lost her mum to cancer. She's very sad, finding it hard to relate to her peers because she's been through something really horrible that none of them have been through. And she doesn't want to do the same thing she did before the cancer. And her mum left behind this list of rules. And one of the rules was buy a holiday home, like by the lake, so that when Macy finds everything too much, you can take her away to the lake house. So that's what her dad does. Her dad follows this list that her mum left religiously. Dad. She had a Brazilian mum, Dutch dad as well, so that plays into it. He's very Dutch.
Yeah.
His personality is, quite quiet. He doesn't talk much.
Like quite reserved.
He's quite reserved, but a good dad.
Hmm.
And he follows this list left by his late wife religiously, never dates anyone else. And so he buys this lake house, and when they move in, she finds a boy in her cupboard, and it's Elliot.
As you do.
Elliot lives with five siblings who are all boys, and it's loud in his house. So he has always escaped to the next door house to read inside this cupboard. And it's like, it's been empty for years. I've just been doing this for a long time.
So funny.
I didn't think anyone would buy it. And she's like, well, this is
my room now.
My cupboard. But the cupboard was always going to be a walk-in library.
Ah, okay.
So she's like, great, you're in the place my library will be. Fate. Yeah. And they're immediately best friends. Elliot is like no 13-year-old boy ever in existence, in that he is very patient and very understanding, tries to get her to talk about her mum and all the things she's gone through.
I mean...
And they're like...
I don't even know an adult male that could do that.
Honestly.
I'm joking.
Elliot, before he fucks up, because that's what causes them to stop talking, which is fairly obvious. I don't think that's a spoiler, because you get that picture quite quickly, because the first thing he says is, I know what I did was bad, but... not talking to me for 11 years.
I mean, there has to have been a reason for them to not talk, so...
Yeah, basically they're best friends.
Yeah.
And he gets her to talk about her mum when no one... Her dad can't talk about her mum, no one else will in her life. Her friends are like, weird, it's 3 years ago, get over it.
And they're like, ride or die. Best friends.
Yeah, and so like, she starts getting her dad to take her to the weekend house more and more and more. She spends entire summers there, every Christmas... So, like, and then their family starts to become close, although her daddy is very reserved. But, like, as in Elliot's parents are just like, oh, we've got 5 kids, what's one more? Come on. And then they have a baby daughter throughout the time she knows Elliot. Aww. So he gets, like, a baby sister, so it's 5 boys with a baby sister, so it's that whole cute stuff.
That is cute.
Yeah, and we kind of get walked towards what happened to make them not talk for 11 years. And in the present day, her dad has also passed away. But we don't know when, and we don't know what happened. And Elliot had no idea. So she has to tell him. And he obviously gets quite close to her dad because he spends so much time at their house.
Yeah.
Running away from his 5 siblings who don't shut up. Who are all very, like, sport, sport, sport.
So it's like a little sanctuary for him.
Yeah. So he, like, has to find out when they first start to reconnect that her dad has died.
Aww.
But she won't talk about it.
Yeah.
And she won't talk about why they stopped talking 11 years ago. Because those events happened... very close together, basically.
Ah.
And it's part of why she won't talk about it. And Elliot's just like, I know what I did was bad, but it wasn't a reason to block me out of your life completely.
Mm.
And she always talks about, she, as they go from friends to boyfriend and girlfriend as teenagers, she says, I couldn't handle losing another person. That's why I don't want us to date. If we break up, I could not handle losing someone.
Oh.
Like, so I lost my mum. I can't lose you. And then she does lose him.
Yeah. So she's heartbroken.
Yeah. Even though it's her choice.
Yeah.
The reason she makes those choices are very understandable when we get to them.
Yeah, I mean, she's a teenager as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, so...
Everything's pretty black and white when you're a teenager, isn't it?
Present day, it is them reconnecting. It is her kind of having some revelations about the life she's currently leading and how it's not bringing her a lot of joy.
And her fiancé is not...
not bringing her a lot of joy.
Mm.
Both of them have both been badly hurt by someone in the past, essentially. And they're together because it's easy.
Yeah.
It's just always been easy.
It's just like a comfort thing, I
guess. And they're like,
just going through the motions.
Yeah, and when she reconnects with Elliot, he's quite understanding about it. He's like, yeah, you know what? I can understand wanting to get some closure. You do you.
Yeah.
I'm not jealous.
Off recording, you'll have to tell me what he did.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Again, this is not... This whole book is filled with grief and nostalgia. And it's like a long summer holiday vibes.
Very different to that Once in a Blue Moon.
Yeah. Twice in a Blue Moon. Yeah, completely
that
different.
That was that mumbling thing I'm not supposed to do. Sorry.
No, it's fine. So, yeah, it's quite a sad book. I won't lie to you guys. Like, it's if you want, like, a lot of plot and depth with your romance... this one's for you. If you don't want to hear a lot about grief and sort of getting a bit older and reflecting on the person you've become, and like, it's very, yeah, it's a good book though, I will say. And it had a good ending. Maybe I'm not okay. I've been reading a lot of sad stuff.
So on a less grief note,
yeah.
I am obsessed with this new series that you will love.
Oh, fuck you.
It's done though. 6 books.
Fuck you.
It's done. It gives me Zodiac Academy vibes.
Oh.
Okay, so this is the Bonds That Tie series. I'm through book, I'm in book 3 at the moment. Honestly, I've been reading, the first two I read like, it took me a day for each one. And if I hadn't had to stop to read books for reviews I have to do,
yeah,
I would have just binged this entire series. I've actually, the whole time I've been reading other books for reviews, I've just been waiting to get back to this series, which never happens. So it's by Jay Bree. The digital is in KU. The audio are on Everand. So this follows.
No, look, you don't get to do the fucking
You will love this.
No.
Okay, the main character gives me Tori from Zodiac Academy vibes as well. She's just like grumpy and just making things worse for no reason, but there is a reason. But you know, we're just really stubborn. Okay, so in this world, it's a paranormal romance. It's a paranormal reverse harem romance.
Oh, shit.
Okay, so in this world, everyone has a supernatural power. Pretty. Does everyone? Yeah. No, not everyone does, actually. But most people have these gifts. She gets moved to a school where everyone has the gifts. So you kind of forget that there's people in the world that don't have gifts. We find out about... They've all got amazing names as well. Okay. So we find out about our main character who... is called, oh god, her name has slipped out of my head. Oh, she's called Ollie for short. It's like, it's a flower, Olinda or something.
Okay.
Ollie. We start off so hard to explain because there's a lot that I still don't understand about the world as well. So in this world, a lot of people are bonded to someone. So you have, it's like a mate's thing.
Okay, yeah.
So you have a central bond and then there's usually a few that are bonded to that person.
Right, okay.
And they haven't really explained how or the why just yet. It's just kind of a thing. Somehow they can find out who you are bonded to via a blood test. So I don't really understand the concept of the blood test bit. I'm not going to lie. I'm hoping they explain that a bit further on.
Interesting. But our main
character, Ollie, her mum and... dads, because her mum was the central bond, so she had three dads, basically. They die in a car crash, I believe it
That's
is.
Some bad luck.
Mm. And either just before or just after, I think it's after when she's in hospital, they do the blood test and she finds out at 14 she's got five bonded males.
Dang.
Yeah. And she runs away and... That's like a tiny little, like the little prequel, little prequel chapter. And then where we are, she's just been captured. So she's been on the run for 3 years. Wait, 14. She's been on the run for 5 years.
Right.
Yeah. She's 19 now. She's just, convenient that, isn't it? She's just been captured by one of her bond, well, her bonded have been trying to find her this whole time. And what happens is, this is the part that's a bit icky, but if you ignore it, the rest of it's fine.
Like my hands, she was doing. So she's doing like flicky hands.
T-Rex hands. The central person has to accept the bond, and to accept it, you have to have sex with the person. Cool. Obviously.
Doesn't Ash vibes then, yeah.
Then both your powers get massive and really good. And the five guys that she's bonded with already are very strong.
Oh, convenient.
And she claims she has no power, but we know she does. She's just keeping it
a liar, liar.
So the five she's bonded with, North, Nox, Griffin, Atlas and Gabe, they Good all names. Have different powers.
I can tell with the hands you're doing how much you enjoyed this book.
They kidnap her. Well, not kidnap her. They drag her back.
Right, yeah.
They put her in this gifted school and they're like, right, you're going to do school until you're ready to bond with us. And she's like, all right. And then she starts making friends with them and getting to know them.
Of course.
And she's like, I will never bond with any of you. And she's just like, I don't want to be bonded, she says to them. And they're all, like, you don't find this out until like book two, but they all think that she means she's not interested in them. But she is. We're in her head. She wants to bone them up. But she doesn't want to have her powers amplified because her powers are...
scary?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And she's worried if they get amplified, she cannot control them.
Right,
and people will die. But she doesn't want to admit to her what her powers are. So she just keeps pretending she has no powers. And it's just that, really. It's... okay.
For fuck's sake.
Some of the characters... there's a range of ages of the guys.
Oh.
So one of them is the one that kind of takes control of it. It was 29. He's a very, very, very wealthy politician. Ugh. So he ends up moving all of them into his house that he can keep an eye on them all. And he very much steps in as like a father figure, which is gross. And I've been sharing my rankings of the guys at the end of each book. People who have already read the series, they have him at the top of their list. And I have him almost at the bottom of my list. So I'm like, where are you going to go with this? Age gap is always
a deal breaker for you, isn't it?
It is. It's and just the power dynamic.
Yeah.
I know she's going to end up being stronger than him. And then you can it's like the Darcy Orion thing. I want to love them, but I'm always icky about
I try.
First book has a sexual assault scene in it. I don't care how you want to try and pretend it's not, it's a sexual assault scene. Okay. And the character herself afterwards is like, oh no, it was, I could have stopped it. Anyway, it's a sexual assault scene. Stop it, author.
I hate those ones where they do blurry consent lines and then try and dress it up in the narration afterwards, in the monologue afterwards, of like, well, I mean,
I was okay with it.
I did enjoy myself. No. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I hate that. Because I'm like, you did it. You did the thing. Own it.
Carry on. Yeah, go through with it. And the male that is the one that does that to her, I looked up at all the characters. I know, spoilers, whatever. I looked up all the characters. I've read his backstory, his sad boy TM backstory. And I don't care how they're going to portray his sad story of his childhood. He sexually assaulted her, and I don't care that he is top of everyone's list at the end. He will always remain disgusting to me because of that scene. It shouldn't have been written in.
Yeah.
If you're not going to follow through with it.
Yeah.
If you don't... He's a villain now. He's disgusting. I don't care that you're going to claim all this shit happened when he was a child.
Yeah.
That I suppose maybe I care about if I actually find out in the story. Instead of just reading it on Wikipedia. But, yeah. Just throwing it out there. There is a sexual assault scene. It's dealt with quite flippantly, which I disliked.
Yeah.
Apart from that, great. 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 Love it. Love it. No, there's a sexual assault scene in the first book. There's no other... sex. Second book, there is a little bit at the end, and then I think it's gonna
escalate.
And even though it's like a reverse harem, I don't think it's gonna be a case of any more than one v one. at any time. But yeah, that is it. I'm into it. I love it. I don't know why. It's like, it's catnip.
Yeah, no, I've had this one on lists for quite a while, to be honest.
I'd never heard of it. I just saw literally someone review it who I follow on YouTube, and she was like, it's bad, but I love it. And I was like,
a trope list probably that I've made for the blog.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a whole bunch of books you need to read, please, and thank you.
Right.
We're talking for like years, I swear.
This has ended up being kind of a long one, so I'm going to just whiz through my last one.
Yeah.
I listened to A Faux Love Story by. And I did not look at the pronunciation of your name, and I'm very sorry. Lonely. It's spelled L-O-A-N. That's first name. Second name, Lee. Luan?
Mm-hmm.
I should have... My bad.
I don't think...
I should have prepped.
I don't think I actually looked it up either, if I'm honest.
So this is two... They're teenagers. So it's like a sort of a YA kind of romance. But it is just a romance book, essentially. This room is getting roasted. Getting
really
up.
Hot. We had to close the window because someone's filling up a paddling pool outside, and it.
Well, we can't have a fan on because it ruins the audio for you.
How we suffer for our art. Anyway, they are from rival Vietnamese restaurant families, and the kids end up becoming friends and then becoming more. And they're working on an assignment from the school newspaper together, and. He is from a family that are like, whatever you do, we just want you to be happy. Like, pursue whatever career you want. We just want you to have a direction in life, because he's a bit directionless at the start. Mm. And then the girl is from a family that are like, you must be an engineer. Mm. Your sister's going to be a doctor in biology. We want you to have a good career. You can't make money being an artist. And that's her dream, is to be an artist. All her free time is spent doing art. She does her art in secret around her parents. So it's very much the story that maybe people from a first generation immigrant family would be familiar with, of them just wanting that you, like, they fought so hard to give them a good life and a better life than they had, and they just want her to be safe and to be financially safe. But that's not her passion in life, is any of the STEM careers they are wanting her to lean towards. And they don't believe these other careers will lead to money. And that's, they want stability and money for her. Because they struggled so much. And they end up, she works in secret with the boy from the rival restaurant.
They're like opposite each other as well.
Yeah, they literally face off to each other. The families have a really long rivalry.
Is this the one where one of them does something, the other one copies it? Is it that?
Yeah. So it's like, oh, they started doing 5 different pho recipes. We must have 6.
Yeah. And
blah, blah, blah. They have like a special day where they do an offer. So then the other restaurant does a special day, but on the type of food that they specialize in that the other one doesn't. Mm. I was so hungry the whole time listening to this.
Right.
We don't have any Vietnamese places in our town. None in this entire area. No. I think the nearest is probably actually close to you, actually.
Mm.
I think there's one there. Anyway, that was nice and vague. Did you enjoy that? So I couldn't get Vietnamese food, so then I was just ordering, like, other, like, not that country. But to
fill the void.
I was like, I need to get some of these flavours. It's not the same at all. We have a really nice Korean place down the road. I was like, this will have to fill the gap.
Yeah.
So it cost me a lot in food money. Listen to this.
But, yeah, like, I remember being starving the whole time when I listened to this. It's just like
deep love of food and family and that first generation immigrant family and the American dream almost as well. And yeah, it's a really cute story. I cried at the end,
but I was driving, so that was dangerous.
Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
it. And the cultural stuff in it, it's just so rich. Yeah, made me very nostalgic for when I actually went to Vietnam as well as a tourist. I
can imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
it. Have you got any more?
No, that's it, yeah.
Yeah!
Well, there was one that I'm going to talk to you off...
Off air?
Yeah. Well, I can mention it now. There's one that I think you might enjoy.
All right.
Didn't really do it. There were some parts I loved, some parts I despised. So I would say it was average for me, but I think you would enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's called The Throne of Shadows by Evangeline. I can never say that name.
Evangeline?
Thank you. Anderson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Show me the cover. Oh, I think I saw you post about this somewhere.
Yeah, possibly. Mm. It's about a fairy princess who gets married off to someone from the Unseelie court and...
I can feel how disengaged you are with this book.
No, do you know what I loved... Yeah. She's a plus-size queen, though.
Yeah.
I love that. And he worships her curves.
Ah.
That was brilliant.
Nice.
I despised... the use of the word pussy throughout. Every time I heard it, I gagged a bit and cringed internally. And there was too much discussion of her virginity for my liking.
Yeah.
But the good parts of the book were good.
Yeah.
So,
I mean...
But you might enjoy it. Romance, it was enjoyable.
Romance authors need to come up with a standard way of referring to people's parts. Because all we've got at the moment is that word. And
which I despise. The book I'm currently listening to has used the word core and vagina. And I was like, nice. And then they just threw in pussy a little while ago when I was on the way over. And I was like,
He looked at my sex. And I'm like,
sex?
They looked at my sex. And I'm like,
at the sex? The vagina?
Just use the word. Yeah. Like, Jesus.
It's not unsexy a word, and by refusing to use it, you're making it awkward.
I mean,
let's normalise.
Oh, use the word
vulva, please.
Me and my boyfriend were keeping up for a while. We were texting each other when we found a new really weird word.
Yeah.
We've stopped doing that, actually.
Oh, we should start again.
Yeah, we had a few good ones.
When this is a bit of a tangent, but when I was doing a parenting course thing with the children's centre.
Oh, I remember that.
And we were put in groups and we got given different body parts and we had to write down slang words for it. And I was on the team that had the vulva and I was like, mate, I got this. And yeah. I just listed these aren't real words. And I was like, I read romance. Well, yeah. I read smut. I can assure you all of these are genuine words
that I have read. Yeah. If real published works of
like literature. My heat. And they're like, no one would call it a heat. And I was like, tell authors.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So thank you for joining us today. As we said.
It's been a bit of a long one.
As we said, we've just picked out however many that was of standout books. If you want to talk about more of like the other books we've been reading, please come join our Facebook group, Lazy Book Lovers Podcast. Join our Discord. We do have a free server, and then we have the one that you get linked to if you want to donate to us on our Ko-fi. And please consider liking, downloading, sharing, whatever you can do, wherever you listen to the podcast. You can set it up to auto download on most platforms. Mm-hmm. And we'd really appreciate that. And we'll see you next week for some upcoming releases. Bye.